Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3, the third episode, it's a huge coincidence those two happen to fall together, of the Squidge Rugby World Cup Rugby Retrospective Rugby Podcast Rugby, which is a huge mouthful and too long a title. I was considering calling it This American Life, but apparently that's taken and irrelevant. So instead, here we are doing the Squidge Rugby World Cup Rugby Retrospective Rugby. My name's Robbie Owen, hello, but if anyone's going to be called Squidge, it might as well be me. And joining me today is, as ever...
My name is Will Owen, and I have a question for you.
Good. Okay, ask me your question.
Are we going to be talking about rugby quite a lot today?
I think rugby might come up.
Okay.
I think we might look down that corridor of the M6.
That's a relief.
I hope it's the M6. I hope we've got the right motorway there.
I have no idea. CV22, I think, is the postcode.
Cool. Okay, because you work in a post office, so you know those things. The right area of Warwickshire, yep. I hope, comes up today. So, what is going to be coming up today, though, is an actually really great game of rugby. Now, I think when a lot of people say, oh, they're going to be talking about Fiji against Namibia from 2011, they think it's a proper rugby hipster, pointless, nothing game.
In fact,
it's one of the greatest games I've ever seen in my life.
I concur.
I love this game endlessly. The first half in particular, I think, is one of my favourite halves of rugby I've ever watched. And the second half, watching it back today, is very good. I'd watched the first half back on YouTube a few times, but the second half, I don't think I'd ever watched back. I might have seen highlights, but I hadn't just sat down and watched it before, since it went out.
At risk of sounding like Eddie Jones, whatever sport they were playing in the first half, I loved it.
Yeah, it wasn't cricket. It wasn't Remember Trevor Brennan.
Well, to be fair, judging by the points scored, it might have been cricket.
Yeah. So, this match finished in the end 49-25 to Fiji, but it could have been even mentaler than that. It was a game that could have... I mean, there were so many different points in which people were scoring or could have scored. There was so much going on. The patterns of scoring were insane. The ways in which they went about it. It was such a bizarre game that I've never quite seen anything else like it.
No, as I say, like, it seemed like a different sport, and like the way that you had to count, sort of like Namibia going for the 3 points all the time and Fiji coming back with 7, and that's what we'll come onto this obviously later on, but that whole thing, and sort of realizing that Namibia were doing a good impression of a team that were in the game at this point when they basically had no possession.
Yes.
Oh, it was just mental.
So to quickly run through what happened, to kind of sum up, I guess, the key events for anyone that either hasn't seen the game in 9 years hasn't seen the game at all. Right, so the game kicks off, and I think everyone at the time is assuming Fiji, and it's a good Fiji team. They obviously, 2007, made the knockout stages. They'd gone and they'd caused a few upsets the previous year. They'd drawn Wales in Cardiff. I think they'd beaten Scotland, or they'd almost beaten Scotland around that time as well. Like, it was a pretty good Fiji team.
And let's face it, no matter what Fiji team you have, they're going to be entertaining.
Exactly. And they were playing a Namibia team who really, going into the game, the only one of their players playing at the highest level was Jacques Berger, who was at Saracens at the time. I think he just finished his first, maybe second season at Saris.
Yeah.
Obviously went on to play, I think, 8 there with them. He played like most of his career. They had a few, you know, reasonably good players, and a few players who always stood out in the kind of the Churchill Cup equivalents and the lower league things.
Yeah.
But really, it was even more so than the last two World Cups. You're looking at the Namibia team and going, oh, well, the only player we know is Jacques Berger. And that isn't necessarily should be the case, because as we'll get on to, there's a few real stand-up players in that Namibia team. But going into the game, people were looking at it, and I watched some of the punditry before the game, and like Michael Lyon just went, yeah, Fiji have too much for them. He was really confident about that from the BITV coverage. There's also a bit as well, and this is a complete side note, in which they were talking about Manu Tuilagi, and they were really massively overhyping him, as was the case back then. We kind of forgot how big the Manu Tuilagi hype thing was. Obviously, he only had 2, maybe 3 caps at the time.
Not many.
And he'd been picked to play in the centre in England's first game, which will be in 2 episodes' time. And there's a bit where Tom Evans is talking about him. And he kind of goes, as you can see here on a clip of him playing the Premiership, he beats, he kind of then looks at the player and goes, the defender, because he clearly doesn't know who the player's name is. Do you want to know who that player was?
Who was it?
It was a very young Owen Farrell.
No.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, and he didn't recognise, and it was kind of, he looked at him and I'm like, actually, there's a chance I wouldn't have, actually, I probably would have, because he'd been in the under-20s team the previous year and been fantastic.
But I probably wouldn't recognise his face quite as clearly as you do these days.
And he had that kind of weird pudding haircut. Mm. Anyway, this is a complete aside. The game begins, and Namibia get a penalty about 60 yards out, and their 20-year-old student at 10
on his second
opts
cap
to go for goal. On his second cap, opts for goal and nails it with change. Like, there's still room to go after he kicks a penalty.
The thing about this is I can remember us watching that at the time, but even watching this back the other day, I still wrote down, as this happened, the mad lad is taking a shot from 58 yards on his second cap. And then underneath in small print, he's only gone and bloody nailed it.
So there's Tinus Kotze, who was, I think, 19, 20 years old at the time. As I say, winning his second cap for Namibia. He was due to win a third cap or a fourth cap that summer, but he didn't have a Namibian passport. So even though he was born in Namibia, he wasn't qualified. He couldn't go out and win more caps.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he was a student at University of Joburg at the time. Mm. So born in Namibia, lived there for a few years, then grew up and lived in South Africa for a long time and kind of came through the South African age grade system. And then was playing in the South African students team, and that was where he was noticed by Namibia. And then, well, this lad was born in Namibia, he lived here for like the first 5 or so years of his life. We're having him.
Yeah.
Because he has one of the biggest boots you'll ever see.
And that's the thing, there was something hilarious about seeing a player that we've never heard of stepping up to take this penalty from 58 yards out, nailing it, and us thinking, like, you know, you think in the sense of, oh, well, if they give away any penalties from that range, then he's just going to boot them over, you know. And you think of him as that sort of player for the next 3 minutes.
Exactly. No, so there's a... I'll just stay on this as well. Because there's a moment in the first half as well where maybe you get a penalty in the corner of the pitch, 40-odd yards out, like between the 10-metre line and the halfway line. And you kind of... My brain goes, oh, it's an easy 3 points.
Yeah, yeah. From a player that you'd never heard of beforehand.
Yeah. Like, and it isn't even like... Even if you've been watching Namibia play every week, you probably didn't know much about this lad. He played one game, but he did score 19 points in that game.
Jesus Christ.
So, he was just kind of coming out of nowhere. This is how you announce yourself to the world, Tinus Kotze. And yet he immediately comes out, scores this amazing kick from well inside his own half, just absolutely wellies it over. And then from there, almost immediately, Fiji regather the kickoff. They run downfield, Gonova scores in the corner.
Basically effortlessly.
Yeah, and we'll get onto this in more detail. But then after Gonova scores, Namibia then get into the 22, and they straight away, Kotze drops a goal.
On second phase, may I add.
Second phase, he drops a goal. Namibia then get back downfield. They have a bit of a maul in the 22. They set up, they just send a centre into the middle, and immediately Kotze drops a goal.
Right, I want to add something here. Me talking about second phase, it took until the seven and a half minutes into the game before a Namibian caught the ball. And they'd scored 3 points by then as well.
That's amazing.
And somebody catches a ball that was the first pass of the game as well, which they caught.
Yeah.
And then they took it in and dropped a goal on second phase.
So only one person other than Kotze had touched the ball by the time he'd scored twice.
Yeah, exactly. And also, with his second drop goal, it's worth doing a little bit of not a deep dive, a very shallow dive on this. But Kotze very bravely takes the ball on like a chip over the top from, I think it was Mori Morivalu, and he takes very bravely. And then, as soon as he sees contact coming towards him, he ships the ball onto somebody else who can take the ball in. And that's not because he wants them to make any gain. That's because he wants to be free to get into the pocket, and literally 3 seconds later, he scored again.
No, this is the third drop goal.
Oh,
this
sorry,
is the third drop goal.
Sorry,
yes, which is a spoiler because that's what happens. So Fiji then clear from the kickoff, and as you say, they run it back, they kick it back a bit, and then 2 minutes on from his previous drop goal, Kotze takes, as you say, a chip. He makes a lovely little break, and he instantly ships it on to Van Vijk, centre alongside him, who crashes it up, and Kotze immediately drops back into the pocket and drops a third goal. And the best thing is, this wasn't an easy drop goal as well. The previous two were, He was stood between the post. Was in the 22. Like, they were very kickable penalties. Like, I think the longest one was maybe 30 yards. Yeah. Whereas this one is properly, like, he's pretty much in the corner. It's a really difficult shot, and he effortlessly nails it.
He doesn't ask his forwards to set up for anything. He's got no blockers or anything. He just calls for the ball in the pocket and then just goes, yeah, I'll slot this again then, lads.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And also the one you were talking about earlier, where he runs the loop and the 12 crashes it in, and he just drops straight back into the pocket.
Yes.
And, like, it's a very promising attacking position, but he just kind of mugs off his own centres by saying, nah, lads, we're just having a three here.
And then the game kind of becomes, you know, back and forth, and Fiji score loads of tries, and then Namibia kind of kicking penalties and drop goals to keep them in range, and it becomes just like back and forth of like seven against three until about 10 minutes ago. Namibia are, I think, about 10 points down, and they blow a try scoring opportunity. Then moments later, Fiji kick a penalty, then Napoleon Langer scores in the corner, and that kind of takes the game out a bit. It kind of looks far more unbalanced on the scoreboard than it necessarily was, but also Fiji were clearly the better team.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And like, they scored so many tries just by kind of getting the ball and going like, oh, should we score now, lads? And then passing the ball and then basically just doing Fiji things.
It was six tries by Fiji.
Yeah. And yet that scoreline looks respectable to Namibia.
Yeah. Well, Namibia did everything they could to take points when they got into 22.
Yeah.
In that they were literally dropping goals the moment they got there. They weren't taking any risks. They weren't setting. They weren't looking to see if anybody was on wide first. They were just dropping goals. And I love that. Yeah. I love that so much.
I can remember that by the time Gotts had slotted his third drop goal, we, watching this at probably about 4 a.m. in the morning, I think it was by this point, we were totally delirious. And we were losing. We were in stitches. And I can remember we put on a bet of how many drop goals is he going to score by the end of the game. I said 8 and you said 5. Sadly, he didn't drop any more. So you won the bet.
No. Oh, but if he could have equaled Yanni De Beer's record, which is, of course, 5 drop goals in the World Cup match.
For the sake of entertainment.
Yeah, okay. This was the thing. Right, okay. So I noticed as well, pre-game, they brought the World Cup out. They had the World Cup there. And they ran out past it, which is exactly deserved, because this game won the World Cup for me.
Yeah, this was the final.
This was... It's a proper glorious clash of stars. Like, to emphasise it, there's a moment when I was flicking through my notes just before starting this, where I noticed I just wrote the words "absolutely love it" in all caps. I've got no idea what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I've got a lot.
I just
like
got
that.
Excited. Yeah. I just got excited about the game in general.
I have one that says "what the hell is happening," and my pen runs out halfway through happening, which sums it up quite a lot.
So, as I say, and there's also like there's this glorious thing that if you look at the stats, possession 50-50, territory 50-50. I love that, like scrums 11 all, like all the stats are so even.
Yeah.
And there's also something in the way that you look at it and you kind of think, well, it felt very much like this clash of stars, that maybe you were just dropping goals left, right and centre, and Fiji were doing mad Fiji things. They were just offloading and sort of full-on bar-bars rugby. But actually, Fiji kicked the ball more than Namibia did.
Yeah.
And Namibia offloaded more than Fiji did.
Wow.
So it kind of became, there were points in the game in which the other team would just do an impression of the other side. So there was sort of, once Namibia had fallen a bit behind, they just started chucking the ball about, and you can almost see,
oh,
like,
oh, that was lovely.
There's a switch turns, and they have like two passes play in a row where they're literally offloading every single tackle.
Oh man!
And they just come completely demented and full on like barbar's rugby.
Yeah, I can remember. I mean, the player that was probably the most entertaining to watch in that game was, for me, Dani van Veek.
Yes.
Who was in like his first year of international rugby. And as soon as Fiji had opened up and just started doing mad offloads and, you know, Fiji things, he fully embraced that. And he was like, right, I'm taking it to you, lads. You're getting a taste of your own medicine. And he was just battering into everybody and he was just loving it. There was a point where, as well, Dani Dames on his first cap for Namibia, and basically, I mean, he's thrown in here. You're the coach and you're saying, oh, you know what, you're going to live your dream, you're going to get your first cap for Namibia. How would you fancy marking Napoleon Nalanga? Good luck, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, go on. And then literally about 6-7 minutes into the game, Eugene Yanchis gives him a ball on the blind side where he's just got a one-on-one with Nalanga and obviously
5 meters
smashed
out.
Onto touch.
Okay, so Namibia spent a lot of time. Every time they had a chance to attack, they just chucked it straight to Dames.
Yeah.
And he has one chance where he gets held up over the line, which is really want to get
does,
over and to just kind of stay in.
Bit help from Berger.
But, But other than that, there's kind of this... There's a lot of the chances where they're chucking it to him and he's doing okay, but he's being smashed into touch or it wasn't on. There's one chance
clearly
when... But Jokberg does really nicely. He kind of draws his last man, puts to him on the wing. And he makes this little bust. He kind of gets away from the cover. And he goes to put through a little, like, low trajectory kick for himself to chase.
Yeah.
And he just kicks it straight into the hands of... It's Natale Talley, isn't it, covering?
Yeah, I think so. And clearly he's just seeing that on television. He just thinks, oh, the cameras are on me. I'm playing world-class rugby here, boys. You know what? If I'm going to chip this guy that I've probably seen on the telly before and not execute it well, then that's fine.
So I believe Dames was playing Curry Cup at the time.
He certainly has.
Yeah, he was. I'm pretty sure he was picked up while he was playing for, I think, the Leopards or the Grigoires or something.
Yes, it was the Leopards.
Yeah. Leopards, yeah. He was picked up by them, by Namibia. Picked up from them by Namibia. And came right in. And they were really like, we've got this dangerous back who plays at quite a high level. We're going to chuck it to him all the time. And there's a couple moments in the second half where he gets some space and he actually looks really dangerous.
Yeah, no, he's good.
As I said, there's a lot of points where it really wasn't on and it made him look like a far worse player. Because he's a perfectly good player. Yeah. Like, he's a good, solid winger.
Yeah.
And he does his job. And like, as I say, the chance where he's held up over the line, he does really well to kind of fight his way over.
Definitely.
And actually that move was really effective. Just the eight crabbing really sideways and then passing, doing a mispass right out to the wing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an old school move. And I don't know, in a way, I don't know if it would work now, but I think it would work if you had a number 8 like Toby Faletau, who's a really good passer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to do like the inverse of that and say a 12 like Hadley Parks.
Yes, that's true. But yeah, Dames is kind of, he's made to look, he's put in a load of really difficult positions and he does as well as you'd expect to do in them. Yeah. And then when he finally gets some space in the second half, he looks very good.
Yeah, no, played well and clearly enjoyed it, so.
Yeah. But as you said, like every single player on this team basically found something to do.
Yeah.
There was every player was involved and every player from both sides was fairly active and doing something cool and fun and exciting or mad.
I don't think a single player had a bad game from either team.
No.
Which is such a corny thing to say, but I genuinely believe that.
And when can you ever look at that and say that's the case?
Yeah, it's such a rare thing. And like Namibia, you know, you can say they were punching above the weight and that's fine.
Mm.
And a lot of the pundits afterwards were saying Fiji played quite poorly because they're letting a lot of points from Namibia and stuff like that. But that was, they were playing against a side who were at the top of their game. And Fiji, while they weren't spellbinding, they were still great and great to watch. And everybody had at least a 6 out of 10 game, I thought.
Exactly. Okay. So we spent 15 minutes kind of just frothing over the game.
Yeah.
Shall we begin looking at points in detail? Because I think we're maybe best off. I say the Kotze penalty at the start, we've kind of talked about.
Yeah.
We've kind of covered. That's good. It's a fantastic shot. As I say, he made 19 points on his debut and then followed it up by kicking a penalty from long range. And there was something about his sheer confidence in that first half. And because also, like, it's a really complete performance from a 10.
It really
because
is.
His passing was excellent.
Yeah, and he brought so much shape to that back line. And sometimes he had forwards who were looking slightly lost in midfield and he was directing them left, right and centre.
Yeah. There's a great moment as well where he basically invents the 1-3-3-1. Where Namibia are in the 20, or on the edge of the 22, they're pretty much on the line. And they've got kind of a forward set of three set up. And it's kind of going to be like a standard 2011 kind of forward pod carry. And you chuck to one of them, the other two latch on and they kind of drive them a bit and then clear out. Except Kotze then basically runs in and intercepts it and fires it out to the furthest man who goes for a bit of a gap.
Yes.
And it's like, he basically invents what is now modern forward play. Like, he invents the modern forward structure.
Yeah. Everything he did with so much conviction.
Yes.
Even if it looked like it was going to go wildly wrong. And, like, he made maybe one or two errors in the whole game, I think. But he had so many touches and just so many things to do. And it was great to watch. Again, second
but
cap.
Like, he was playing with such big balls, big dick confidence that you kind of, if someone had said to you before watching it, this is the best 10 in the world, you'd have believed it.
Yeah, you would.
He kind of came out like I'm Carlos Spencer, what of it?
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, look at me, everyone's eyes on Dan Carter, it should be on me. And he had this just insane level of confidence, but he wasn't, like, he did try to pick a fight with one of the Fijian forwards right at the end, which was quite funny. But other than that, it's also like he goes off injured with 1 minute to go because he kind of properly like begins twisting his body and doing this mad kind of reverse, like Gareth Edwards reverse pass.
Yes.
Whilst one of the Fijian back rows lining him up. And he just kind of, he looks at him and he kind of knows what's going on. So he does this reverse pass, opens up his ribs completely and has to go off because it hurts to be smashed by a Fijian.
Yeah.
But
both that and his fight with, I think it was Ravulo, it's the fact that at the end that he kind of realises the cameras are on him and just like gives him a pat on the side, just like, oh yeah, nice one. You know, you're playing at the top level, that's fine. We got into a fight and I'm a 10, you're a 7, we'll call it even, shall we?
And I think there's probably something, the fact that he'd come from playing university rugby. You know, he was playing like it's a very high level, like South African University League, and like, you know, you recently had Dayanti came from there.
Yeah, Johan Dasil in the next World Cup came from there.
Yes, like there's a lot of actually Springboks and Super Rugby players, and like a lot of the Kings team, you look at them, they're all playing at uni rugby.
Yeah,
in South Africa, it's a really high standard, and that was what he was playing. But clearly, if you're playing with that confidence in that league, it kind of lends itself to this, and it kind of lends itself to that idea and that being able to walk from, actually, I'm playing at a level that's so many steps down, you will be overconfident.
Yeah.
I've walked right into my national team. Look at it. 15 points, 3 drop goals.
What a man.
Okay, so we've spent this entire time as well. Like, they've spent the first 20-odd minutes just kind of establishing themselves very much as a team built around a kicking fly half. You know?
Yeah.
And as I say, like, they've got a really solid running game. There's a few times when he takes the ball to the line really nicely. Back when that was a big part of a tennis game, was taking the ball to the line. And that was a thing people talked about. He does that really nicely. He brings other runners onto the game. As you say, there's a lot of points where he creates shape for them.
Yeah.
And like, his passing is excellent. And he kind of has that like weird like long flick pass that players kind of did in the late noughties.
Yeah. He winds it up really precisely.
Yeah.
And throws it with like so much conviction.
Yeah. And it's almost a cliche, and it should be expected, but he properly brought runners onto the ball rather than just passing to them. You know, he passed 4, not 2, and blah,
definitely.
Blah, blah, blah. But they're very much built on, you know, like there's a long range kick he does into the Fijian half, which is like a 50 meter clearance. He did loads of just great kicking rugby, and he dropped 3 goals, which kind of immediately announced himself as a kicking fly half to do that in the space of, I think, 7 minutes between the first and the last drop goal. But then there's a bit where maybe you get a penalty between the posts.
Yes.
And kicking it will put them back within range of Fiji. Like, Fiji just began to pull away for the first time. And he takes a quick tap.
Just the thing nobody expected him to do.
Yeah.
They've known him for 27 minutes. And suddenly he just goes and completely bins all those expectations. In order to beat Fiji, you must be Fiji.
But this is it. So Fiji start chucking it about, and they're quite successful with it. And so Namibia just go absolutely all in. And they begin just chucking everything about completely. Like, I've just got it written down. And he just says, Namibia... And then in all caps, losing their mind. there's a great bit, speaking of Namibians losing their mind, after that third drop goal, there's a Namibian fan as well who's got a huge Namibia flag running around up and down the steps and just going wild. This is beyond his greatest expectations.
Yeah, he's paid his money to fly out and see them score points.
Yeah.
Fair play to that guy.
And like, I spoke to a Namibia fan just on the streets of Tokyo. I was just like stood in a corner, I think I was wearing a Wales shirt or something. And he came up to me because he wanted help sorting out his SIM card. And he saw me in a Wales shirt and figured I must speak English.
Oh.
And so he came up to me and I just talked to him for a bit about the World Cup. And he was honestly expecting Canada to put 30 points on them. But he'd come out to watch every game just because it was like he loves rugby and he loves Namibia. And so for the thought of them taking a lead against Fiji, them actually pulling ahead and it not being like a lucky lead, them being like, no, actually, we're dominating this, as they did for that first 20 minutes.
They went 9-7 up and then basically straight from the kickoff.
Yeah.
And they just spread the ball and just kind of go like, oh yeah, Nakarawa, yeah, you can score, mate. That's fine. If you want to. And then from the kickoff of that as well, Nakarawa then regathering a box kick and setting up a try for Gonover on the right hand side.
This is it. Okay. I think we need to stop on this because so Fiji came into this game with a young second row.
On his 9th cap.
Yep, I was gonna say he had 8 caps going into the game. And he had prior to the game, he almost didn't play in the World Cup because he was at the time in the Fijian military. And they had a strict ban under, you know, John Key, the Kiwi government, on members of the Fijian military entering the country. And he just got married. And his honeymoon was due to be that September during the World Cup. And so, in order to play in the World Cup, this young Fijian second row cancels his honeymoon and quits his job, which would make him really popular with his wife. Except that young Fijian second row is a guy called Leone Nakarawa. And a few years later, as a result of this game, goes on to sign that kind of multi-million pound euro contract of Racing.
Yeah.
You know, to become one of the highest played rugby players in the world. I think he's like the 11th highest played player in the world. And Glasgow signed him off the back of his performance in this game. because he's extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the stuff he's doing for a second row.
Yeah, and you get a slight taste of the player he goes on to be.
Mm.
And he's like on best behaviour comparatively to the 2015 World Cup, isn't he?
Yeah. But, okay, so kind of the first sign we see of him is when Fiji get down into Namibia's half after the penalty. They get into the 22, and they kind of have this, like, this period of quite loose play.
Yeah.
And they spin it out to the second row, who then fires this inch-perfect mispass
yeah.
to Gonyver. And the really impressive thing about it is, if you go back and look at, like, Gonyver's four tries are on YouTube on their own, it's quite easy to find. It would have been very tempting for him as a second row to either crash it in, to just pass the guy next yeah. to him, or to, if you're a second row who knows about passing, to kind of throw a wild, like, loopy ball to the guy right out on the wing.
Yeah.
He doesn't do any of them. He fires, like, an inch-perfect, like, really quick, precise pass to the guy in space, to Gonyver, yeah. who, even if he got caught because there was cover coming across, I think it was two-time Ivy Try of the Year nominee Chris Andabota yeah. coming across, even if he got to him, Gonyver then has another man outside him
yeah.
to offload.
Yeah.
His decision-making and the quality of the pass for a second row, especially 10 years ago, are extraordinary.
He doesn't worry too much about the timing of the pass, does he?
No.
He just thinks, right, I'm going to get it. That guy's in enough space and has enough speed to score yeah. in that corner.
And then we then come into moments later, right? So Gonyver scores his first try.
Yeah.
Gonyver then scores a second try. And this is... No. I've skipped something. I've skipped Nakarawa scoring himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Nakarawa then pops up on the end of a move and scores himself. You then have, at half-time, like Tom Evans said, it looks like a winger finishing that. He's so comfortable. He's positioning the way he runs onto the ball, the way he just dots it down. Because he's Fijian.
Yeah,
he's
I was going to say.
And he's...
He's got a cheat code.
You kind of say, oh, he's Fijian, as though that means more than he's Leone Nakarawa.
Yeah.
And he's the most... He might be the most phenomenally talented, like, just talented player I've seen. Like, next to Gavin Henson.
In terms of somebody who can carry the ball in one hand, in terms of dotting the ball down, that's a pretty easy yeah. skill for somebody like Nakarawa.
Yes. Well, as I said, like, in terms of sheer raw talent, Nakarawa stands next to kind of Henson and Carter
yeah.
as the most talented players I've ever seen.
Yeah. I can scarcely think of any more talented forwards, if any at all.
Yeah. I think that's a good show. I think he might be the most talented forward I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's insane. And he's also, in the time since, learned to do the hard stuff as well.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. And it was kind of... It's very easy to get carried away with yeah. how good he was here.
He did also get like a glimpse at the end of the game of the way he carries the ball these days. There's a couple of times he carried the ball and then starts to do the thing where he thinks about, you know, lifting the ball and maybe offloading it.
Yeah.
And that threat of the potential of an offload just drags one more person in. And even if he then
yeah.
tucks the ball and secures it, there's an extra person in that breakdown. And he's now mastered that. As a
absolutely. And so, okay, so there's a moment right after him scoring himself in which Fiji regather the kickoff, Kenitali box kicks, and the ball bounces, and Nakarawa himself, having chased the kick, like absolutely flying up after it, regathers it, sprints down the wing, and he then does this like brilliant thing. Where he...
Insane, isn't it?
Talk us through it.
He starts running down the wing, and he does that thing where he strides, and he just looks very fast because he's just very comfortably running. And then he slightly cuts inside the Namibian fullback, who is two-time Try of the Year nominee, Chris Andabota. He ever so slightly cuts inside, but not so much as if he's trying to beat him. He's doing it to sort of shift his body weight back. And then he lifts the ball on his right-hand side to Gonyver, who he's not even looked at. Obviously, he's just got the communication from him. Gonyver's coming from yeah. his left-hand side onto his right, like a kind of pseudo-switch. And then he lifts the yes. ball perfectly for Gonyver to run onto and finish on the right-hand side.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's exquisite. And wonderful. And there are so few of the second rows with the pace to get up there. Never mind the awareness to think they've got the space there. Never mind the skill set to get it on. And never mind actually the pace to be a threat themselves. The entire defence yeah. draws in on him because he's really quick. Because you think, actually, this second row is quick enough to finish this and to outpace half of us. So I, as incredibly quick Namibian man, two-time IAB Try of the Year nominee, Chris Andabota, need to commit to stopping him. And again, you have all the other cover focuses on him.
Yeah.
And it allows him to put Gonyver away down the wing. And it's completely remarkable. And so my favourite thing about it is, then I think someone on commentary, or no, I think it's Michael Leiner at half-time, then begins to talk about this. And he says, just look at this offload from a second row. And he said, it's like Sonny Bill Williams, or like, and then he kind of pauses. And I realise nowadays you'd say it's like Sonny Bill Williams or like Leone Nakarawa. But at the time, because this was kind of his first huge game, like he'd played a handful of tests before this, but they'd mostly been PNC, you know, and he played, I think, he played PNC both years. He played against Romania. Otherwise, he'd only played against Fiji and Tonga and came off the bench against Ireland. Fine.
Yeah.
But this was kind of his biggest test up to that point.
Yeah, world stage.
It's that funny thing. It's almost like the thing I said about Owen Farrell earlier, that nowadays that really stands out because you're going, oh, it's this world-class player doing the thing he's best known for.
Yeah.
But at the time, no one knew who this guy was.
No,
that's it. Glasgow signed him off the back of this game.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they found his potential for this, mostly based around one incredible skill and then revolving a game around that. That incredible skill was just starting to be found here, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Ah, it was... He was so impressive.
Yeah.
And there is one moment where he knocks the ball on, though, which is...
He's shit,
like, under
he?
No pressure. I know. And it's kind of weird to see him make a handling error that isn't forced by six defenders coming in on him.
Yeah. There's another point as well when we've already marvelled at Kotze quite a lot and we're talking about first half an hour of the game here. But there's another point where you start to think, like, maybe we've got to the 20th and you think, okay then, Kotze, I know what's coming here. I know what you're about to do. You're about to take them 3 points again, aren't you, you silly little bugger? And then he originally sits in the pocket, he swings round and he goes for a chip over the top. And
right.
It just goes slightly too far to the right-hand side. Otherwise, he might have scored himself.
Yeah. Is this the TMO chance
you're
talking about?
Yeah.
The sort of 5 metres out from the line.
Yeah.
When he swings back round. And again, it falls almost for... It's Van Vijk, isn't it?
Yeah, Van Vijk. Or even himself.
Yeah, or himself. Ideally, it would have fallen for himself. But I think there's one of the Fijians gets a hand... I think it's Kanatale gets a hand to it. And it gets a hand to him. And it kind of leaves Van Vijk then can't quite ground it. But as you say, it's that wonderful thing of him learning his reputation and using it against Fiji.
Yeah.
There's this kind of mind game going on as well, on top of everything, of like, you know who I am now.
Yeah.
I've established myself. Be afraid.
He spent the first half hour trolling by scoring drop goals. Then he spends the next half hour trolling by not scoring drop goals.
Exactly. Can we just focus on the Namibian centres for a second?
Yeah.
Because I like them. So they had Piet van Zyl and Donny van Vijk in the midfield. And so Piet van Zyl, I like because he's a big slabber man, isn't he? Like
he's a big boy.
He's a big boy. He doesn't have much neck, and what he does have kind of sits below his shoulders.
He reminds me a bit of André Esterhazen.
Okay, yes, I can see that completely. Yeah, his shoulders are kind of elevated above the level of his neck, so his shoulders kind of finish about his nose in terms of height wise, which I like. I like that about him. I like how solid he is. I like how kind of he looks a bit like a cel-shaded video game character. You know, he looks like he could be in the Wind Waker or something. He doesn't quite look real, and I like that. But another thing I like about him is that he seems to have, like, several modes. And there are two moments in this game where he gets into a bit of space, and clearly you see, like, his brain process happen. That he clearly, his default mode is just to smash it up.
Yeah, he's quite
and you
direct.
See kind of like, you see kind of a switch flick and his whole body language changes. He activates stepping mode and he suddenly becomes a completely different player. Like suddenly Shane Williams activates in the mold of this like massive potato and he starts just jinking around.
Starts running backwards.
And just beating everyone. Exactly.
Starts
like
he's stepping his own wingers.
So he's like, hold on. When did Gerald Davis arrive? What's going on here? And but the best, it's because there's half a second where you can see him change. You can see his whole mindset shift.
He stops with the ball, flicks a switch on his head, and then goes, right,
exactly.
I've arrived. A light bulb arrives on his head.
It's almost like, you know the Monty Python sketch with the Philosopher's Football match?
Yes.
When they realise they have the Eureka moment and they run out and score this beautiful goal. It's almost like that. Like, you can see the cogs turn and him immediately go, I'm going to step. And it's not like Scott Gibbs who just does it effortlessly once. He's like really consciously gone, I've got an opportunity to sidestep. I should do some sidesteps. I'm going to do some sidesteps. Brian Habana, look out. Donny van Vijk, then, his centre partner, is kind of the foil for him. He's kind of the guy that he needs alongside him. Because Van Vijk, and we talked about a bit, I guess the player you'd almost compare him to is a bit Lucanio Am.
Yeah, I can see that.
In that he's solid and slightly he's nowhere near as good as Am. Like, I don't mean to say that as a, like a, but he's solid and kind of classy and kind of an underrated defender
with the potential to go slightly mad.
Yes, but without the actual class of Am. Like, whereas Am does that kind of floating onto the ball thing.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, he's like if you tried to make Lucan Yuam out of Play-Doh.
I mean, given how much we spoke about Play-Doh on our last episode, I'd like to see where this is going. I'd like you to expand on this analogy at some point as we go through this.
Expand. Expand, like Play-Doh in an oven.
Nice. Nice.
Danny van Wyk, who, again, I think is like is exactly the link man this Namibian backline needed. Because you look at them, they've got kind of... So, also, Eugene Yankees, their scrum half, who had played in 2007 as well and played in 2019, like has played in four World Cups now. And very established, very well-respected. Yeah. But in 2007, he was mostly a fly half, and he went into this as a 9/10.
Yeah.
And he's since converted to be a scrum half.
Yeah, it's probably worth saying that Yankees was probably the only player that we'd both heard of, other than Jacques Berger from this Namibian team.
Yeah.
And even then, I think I thought that him and Elton Yankees were the same player.
Though, I remember when Elton Yankees came along, like, it was probably a year or two after this, kind of having that same thing of like, oh, is he related? Mm. Is this like a bit like the Pietals being like a brother that plays for Tier 2 Nation and then a brother who plays in the 20s for Tier 1.
Yeah.
There's the two Namibian hookers as well who I'll briefly touch on.
Yes, please.
Hugo Horn, great player. Yeah. Very solid player. And their other hooker, if you thought Hugo Horn was a good name, their other hooker was called Bertus O'Callaghan.
What a name.
So, no, to go back to Eugene Yankees. So you can kind of, because as I say, he was a converted fly half. He was a fly half, but he was quite short, and he kind of moves into scrum half, and became a scrum half as he went on. You can really tell from his body language, if you watch him close. I don't know if you notice this as a scrum half yourself, but he's really upright for a nine, in the way most scrum halves are very like low to the breakdown, like their kind of shoulders are crouched over, they're on the ball all the time.
Mm.
He's always stood upright, and he kind of then bends his whole body down and passes it on in the way you see when like a forward steps in.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that was a bit more of a trend back in 2011, to be fair, for scrum halves to be stood like that. I think it's a slightly more recent thing for scrum halves to be coached to sort of crouch rather than to sort of sink into the ball, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I haven't noticed it with any other nines this competition.
Other than
so far.
Taniela Moa, who almost needs like a Zimmer frame to get down, pick up the ball.
Bless it. No, because he's not that tall. He couldn't need the Zimmer frame.
True.
And it wouldn't hold his weight. The other scrum half point, though, Buatava, who I had no memory of at all, came off the bench for Fiji.
I only have memory of playing him on the Rugby World Cup game.
I don't remember Buatava at all. But he comes on, and he kind of has these two moments in which he's this combination of world-class and just outright terrible. In which he makes, like, I think it's like his second touch, maybe. He takes the ball from like a little like probing kick behind, and he beats two men, and he kind of goes through, and he's kind of drawing the last man, and he chucks the ball 5 metres forward into touch.
Yeah, that was great fun. And like, that was such an impressive knock-on. There's that, and Jacques Berger does one that goes about 10 yards forward. Mm. And like, I was thinking, like, which of those is the most impressive knock-on of this game?
Because Berger carries it to ground.
Yeah.
And then the ball kind of just spills forward, but it spills properly 5 metres forward and almost into touch.
And
like
that sort of knock-on only happens when you're doing an offload, really.
Yes. That knock-on from Berger, as I say, he's already hit the ground, but it only doesn't go out because there was a winger covering in the backfield. It rolls so far forward into the hands of the winger covering. covering back for a kick.
Talk about turning the wingers and turning the fullback. Just lob it as far as you can, Jacques, maybe in tackle. That's fine.
Jacques Berger carried the ball far more than I remember.
Yeah, he did that. And obviously, you already touched on that 2-on-1 he executed with Dames. Like, his ability to carry and his ability just on the ball really showed there. It looked really impressive. When in later World Cups and stuff, he made more of a point of like, oh yeah, I don't really carry the ball. That's not really my thing.
Well, there was that interview with... It was a post-match interview of him where he said something like, hey, I don't think I touched that like egg-shaped thing afterwards. That was a bad Jacques Berger impression.
Yeah.
He follows me on Twitter, so there's an absolute chance he might hear this. Yeah. That was a humble brag.
Yeah, it was. Name-dropping.
But, yeah.
Nobody who played in this game follows me on Twitter, so...
Oh, but O'Callaghan doesn't fancy it.
No.
No.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But Jacques Berger, you know, fantastic player and weirdly more rounded than I remembered, because at Saracens you just thought of him as chop and hits breakdowns.
Yeah.
He, brilliant tackle, like one of the best tacklers you'll see, just because he had no regard for his own body.
Yeah,
like,
and all of his tackles
even beyond
really
Dan Lydiate level. Like, Dan Lydiate had no regard for his own shoulders.
Yeah.
Jacques Berger for his whole body.
Yeah. And he's such a disciplined player as well. For somebody who plays that long as a number seven at the top level, I think all of his tackles were legal. He would very occasionally give away cynical penalties that break down. He was such a clean player and a very good leader.
He played for Saracens. Of course he did.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. But he was fantastic. As I say, it becomes every player was. And also in that Namibian back row alongside him was Tinus du Plessis, the six, back row forward, who was very good.
Yeah.
In a way I don't think I noticed and appreciated quite when watching this game live, because there was so much mad shit going on that you're not watching for a flanker getting involved with the breakdown.
Again, you saying that Van Vake being the foil for Van Zyl, I think that kind of works in a similar vein.
Yes.
Du Plessis with Berger. Nivenhuis as well, number eight, had a very good game.
Nivenhuis, yeah, very good. He loves crabbing sideways for number eight, which I don't mind, because he's a very good carrier.
Yeah, just so long as he could smash somebody on the other end of it. There was, I think it was he did it. There was one point where he got the ball sort of with no real sort of shape planned or anything, no real plan for him, but it was kind of messy ball. And he really eagerly just heads for the touchline and sees somebody he might be able to nail. And then he obviously bowls him over, sends him flying, while going over the touchline himself. Such was his like passion for just carrying the ball into somebody and knocking him flat.
So there's a great bit in the second half in which, just you reminded me of, in which Fiji just pointlessly kick long and kind of into the 22, it's a nothing kick. And normally you expect the fullback to mark it, except most fullbacks are not two-time IRB Try of the Year nominee, Chrisander Botha. And so, two-time IRB nominee, Chrisander Botha, clearly before he catches the ball, thinks, I'm going to have a go here. And he kind of catches it, like, running backwards. And there's a few times in the first half as well where he lets the ball bounce, clearly, because he drops his first one, because you can tell the sun's in his eye.
It's that thing of,
and he's clearly avoiding catching it.
It's that thing of just like, right, I'm going to have a go here. It's going to look selfish, and my forwards may have a go at me in 2 seconds' time. But I tell you what, if I score here, I'm going to look fucking magic.
Exactly. I'm in for my third IRB Try of the Year nominee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he has that moment where one of the Fijians is chasing after him, and he kind of does this really forced sidestep on them and goes. And at that moment, like, he has, in full Pete Van Zyl's fashion, activated sidestepping mode. And he's then just beating everyone. And he's kind of probably going. And then he kind of comes to, like, the defender he can't beat once he's crossed the halfway line. As he said, he's made, like, 30 metres. He's beaten, like, five defenders at this point. It's, like, it's hugely impressive. It's fantastic. And he just keeps going. And then when he eventually does, he frees an arm and does like a proper, as you say, Sonny Bill or Leonie Nakarawa offload out the back door to PJ Van Liel, who is the replacement second row, who's just come onto the field.
Not known as an athlete, safe to say.
No.
Good player though.
What Van Liel does is he kind of gets the ball in space and he starts running. And he kind of has that moment I look forward to of looking up and seeing, oh, Jesus Christ, there's 50 metres. like it's a broken field,
there's
50
metres. I've got to outstrip some Fijians here, lads, as well.
And so what he does, he goes at what I believe is his full pace. He looks like he's sprinting, but he also kind of just like angles himself and positions his body, because there's about four Fijians in the backfield, and he somehow, the comparison I'm going to make is, you know when you go bowling, right? And on your first throw, you manage to split it completely. So you've got like the two on either end and like one in the middle and you've got, like, there's no way you can clear them all. Yeah. Right, but you just throw it, and somehow they all battle off, and you manage to hit them all. He manages to do that? He's somehow just, like, bowling balls his way into the four Fijians in the backfield and manages to take them all out. And they're not stood in the same space.
The thing is...
Like, he just takes his offload, and what he does is he goes, no, I want contact, and I want as much of it as possible. I've ran 5 metres already. That's way too much.
And all four of those Fijian players are convinced that they've each made the tackle. They're all convinced he's somewhere on the floor 3 metres back, but he's still just running off into the distance.
And it isn't even like it takes four of them to bring him to ground, just all of them going him at the same time and all drop him. And it isn't like he then carries them along a bit further. He immediately like goes down like sack of spuds all along.
Yeah.
But he's deliberately eyed them up. And I kind of rewound and watched that clip again he does. Like, he's looking around at all. He kind of almost makes eye contact with all of them individually, like in an anime way. It kind of cuts across and goes boom, boom, boom. And you kind of see his eyes and their eyes. And then he takes them all down. And Namibia then try and chuck it about. And I think actually it might have led to one of their tries.
Yeah, I think it does. I think that leads to Heinz Kohl's try.
It does. It leads to Heinz Kohl's try.
I've got this written down in my notes as, just in block capitals, what a fucking try by Kohl. And I've spelt fucking wrong.
But have you spelt Kohl right?
I spelt Kohl right.
Good. Okay. So... Namibia then, as we say, like they recycle it a bit, they chuck it about a bit. I think Van Zyl has a pretty good chance. He kind of makes a bit of a bust. And then they get it out to Heinz Kohl.
Yeah, and Heinz Kohl, second row, you know, pretty respected player. Good player. Good big lad. Mm. And what does he do but skin Muramura Fahalu? He throws a really outrageous dummy that realistically he was not going to throw a pass that flat. But... he throws that dummy, and then he gets on the outside of Muramura Fahalu, who probably realises at this point tackling's optional.
Yeah.
Kohl scores.
But when you watch it from the first angle, it's outrageous, the dummy, from the live angle.
Yeah.
But when you see it from the shot behind the try line, when he's just kind of... it actually just looks very much like the right option. Like Muramura Fahalu drifts off him, and he sees that and goes through. And he then makes a bit of a meal of putting it down. And he also has that thing of, like, instead of trying to beat the fullback, he just runs for the bit of the try line that's furthest away from, or whoever the cover is, rather than fullback.
Yeah.
He just runs for the bit of the try line furthest away from them. And he doesn't quite have the pace to make it still. But he does, really, second row, he went on to play for Wasps after
he
this
did,
as well.
Yeah.
Wasps signed
it's
him.
Also worth saying,
good solid player.
That last phase for Kohl to find the ball in all that space was set up by an amazing off-ball tackle by Tinus Duplessis. Who eyes up, I think it's Kenitale, who's maybe thinking about jackling the ball, then kind of does that thing where he thinks, no, I'm a 9, realistically, I'm not getting the ball. I might get somewhere in the defensive line. And Duplessis just lines him up from about 20 yards and just smashes him nowhere near the ball. And obviously Namibia keep the ball as a result of that, and it's brilliant. And then Kohl, when he's putting the ball down, really forces it into the ground to kind of show off the referee, like, yeah, this is definitely down. Like, he's trying to dig a hole with it.
It's fantastic. Should we talk about Namibia's other try as well?
Yep, with Dames and Van Vaik. We might have confused the finish of these, by the way. There's an outside chance of that. But yeah, Dames and Van Vaik making that break.
Yes.
Down the left-hand side. And the two of them supporting each other really nicely, as if they're just playing on the training paddock, and then sort of realising again they're on telly before getting tackled. And then, of course, the ball goes wide. And
Marius, the left winger as well.
Yeah.
Also makes a lovely bust in it.
Yes.
To mention him. Again, everyone played well. Him and his kind of like weird sandy blonde hair. He looks like an extra in Grease.
Yeah.
Kind of busting up the wing, sprinting through, gets into the 22.
Yeah, sorry, not Dames. I meant Murray and Marbad. But yeah. And then, of course, it's spread wide to who else but two-time Try of the Year nominee, Chrisander Botha.
Yeah. So the other thing is, if you look at this try as well, the ball comes out initially to Tim Scotzer. He then... pass on to one of the centres, I forget which one. He then loops round.
Really badly. He then,
yeah, but it comes off.
Yeah.
He then passes it on to two-time IOB Try of the Year nominee, Chrisander Botha, who then, and every time on my notes I've got him written down as 2TIRBTOTYNCB.
I put him down as Botha for short.
Yeah, but two-time IOB Try of the Year, Chrisander Botha, then skins his man.
Who's Nalanga, I will add.
Yes. Napoleon Nalanga, who at the time as well had been top try scorer in the French league 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
People forget that. At the time was just like an insanely great player. He was kind of even beyond Nadolo at the minute, like even beyond Nadolo in the last few years, he was about the highest profile tier two player in the world.
It probably was.
And he didn't get any real time or attention in most of this game.
No. It was hilarious. Should we move on to his try? Should we talk about that?
Yeah. Okay.
Where literally you can see that the game plan is that Buatava has come on, and clearly he's just kind of thought like, right, I'm going to show off to the coach here that I've got some really good tactics in this game. I'm going to pass the ball to Nalanga. And he does that as they get into the 22, and he passes it blindside, and Nalanga's got a one-on-one with one of the front row forwards, I think it is, and obviously just finishes it pretty easily. It obviously goes to TMO, but it's just, it looks like it's a stroke of genius from Buatava, but I'm convinced that he just thought, yeah, this guy's pretty good. Let's give him a one-on-one. Yeah, like, he can score in the corner.
Because he was in that full-on, like, as all of these like massive, quick, like South Sea Island wingers tend to have like a season or two of insane form.
Yeah.
And Nalanga was very much in his. And so it was kind of a surprise because everyone went in with, he was kind of the key man everyone talked about beforehand. Like, the guy to watch is Napoli Nalanga. And then Gonova turns up and scores four tries. Yeah. Who at the time was playing in the Championship, I think.
He was playing in the Pro D.
Pro D, okay. He'd been playing sevens. I think he played at Doncaster or something at the time.
Yeah, Rotherham maybe.
Well, he played at Rotherham.
He was playing at Colomier, I think it was at the time.
Right, okay. And had played, you know, he'd captained Fiji Sevens recently before that. And he then comes in and scores four tries. You go, oh, okay, they've got two of them.
Yeah.
Right, okay. They've got someone other than just Napoli and Nalanga, who was brilliant.
I think my favourite thing about that Nalanga try is that as Buatava's going to pass him the ball, you can kind of see him looking up. I think it's Bertus O'Callaghan who's covering it just on the wing by himself.
Right.
Kind of looks up to him like, yeah, good luck here, mate. It's then about to round him just as he's catching the ball.
Napoli Langer is, of course, still playing.
Yeah.
Who is he playing for?
He's playing in like some kind of fifth division somewhere, isn't he?
No.
Oh, wait, no. No. You told me this. He plays for Ensai? Or someone like that?
No, he was last year playing in the Russian League.
Yeah.
But he has since signed, and he plays in Paraguay's only professional rugby team.
That's mad.
I'm just going to quickly look up their squad.
Yeah, they better be winning the league.
No, because, well, okay, so it's the SLAR, which is the Super League, America, Latin, whatever, which is the South American Professional League. They played one fixture every team, and then the league was abandoned due to the coronavirus. So there's been one round of the entire league since it became. There's been one round of professional rugby in South America. Okay, so speaking of Paraguay's one professional team, if you look at Uruguay's one team, the Peñarol is entirely like the Uruguay squad, basically. Those that don't have contracts in the Pro D or whatever. You've got a few of us along those lines. You've got like, the one Argentine team is basically like the Jaguares A.
Right.
However, if you look at the squad for Paraguay's one team, the Olympia Lions, which is a great name anyway. So we have Liam Hendricks, former South Africa under-20s player.
Right.
There's a Argentine prop who's got a couple of caps called Gonzalo Hughes.
That's a good name.
It's a very good name. And then as we move further back, it starts to get fun. So, in the backs, at scrum half, they're Damien Stevens.
Oh, okay.
Who, of course,
yeah.
Now Namibia scrum half.
Good player.
Very good, very solid player.
I'm surprised he's not playing higher up.
Yeah. But they have the current Paraguay 10, is one of their few kind of Paraguay players' first choice.
Right.
Then, their back three is Grant Hermanus, who South Africa under-20s team. Of course, I've looked this up before, started over Cheslin Kolbe in a couple of games.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How the mighty have fallen.
Now he's playing in the Paraguay team. I know. And on the wings, they have Fiji's Napoleone Lalanga, formerly twice top try scorer in the French league, in the top 14 as well.
Yeah.
Not the Pro D, the top 14. And on the other wing, Manuel Montero.
Oh, wow.
Of Argentina.
Fair play. That's a solid back three by the sounds of it.
27 caps for Argentina.
Yeah. Very good finisher.
They've got loads of like solid Argentine players and so on dotted throughout their team.
Yeah.
Maximo Ledesma, who is the nephew of Mario Ledesma, is there. He's a 10 or centre. That's a complete aside. But yes, Napoleon Nalanga, who is now playing in Paraguay.
Yeah, thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, no, there was a point quite early on in the second half as well in terms of the chances that Fiji, well, just about managed to finish. Was Gonova's fourth try, where Lova Balavu, who hadn't seen a great deal of ball in a lot of space at this point break through, and Jack Berger ends him with a tap tackle. Like, that and Jeff Parling's tap tackle on Jesse Marg of the Lions in 2013.
Yes.
They deserve some kind of Hall of Fame just for that kind of moment.
A tap tackle Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. Well, is it possible to clothesline somebody with a tap tackle around their ankles? Is that a thing?
Yeah. There's another, you've just reminded me, there's another moment, and we actually talked about it a bit, the Marias, the winger.
Marias, yeah.
There's a moment after he makes that break, he kind of sears upfield and he goes to offload, and he kind of, as he's looking up and as he's releasing the ball, he realises the support's cut around completely and gone into ruck behind, so there's no one there to offload to. And he then has one of the Fijian forwards get, I think it might have been Liravu, is going down to pick it up. And him, from his position, having just been tackled, he said pounces on the ball. So he's technically then just offloaded to himself.
Oh, yeah.
He's just a little pass to himself. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoying the occasion.
Yeah.
Getting as many touches as possible. It's like, exactly. It's like on Be a Pro mode, where it's just like, make so many passes, get the ball as many times as you can.
Yeah. But there is like a, because one of the Fijians is bending down to pick it up, and he kind of just flops like, no, mine. And just takes it from him. And yet, technically turns it into a Brian O'Driscoll pass to himself.
Yeah. They're basically the same player, Conrad Murray and Brian O'Driscoll, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're literally
the same guy.
Completely the same player. Yeah, I haven't seen anything slightly different at all between them. I can't tell you any differences between them. They both had, at some point, shocking blonde hair. So
yeah,
that makes them the same guy.
Very true.
There's another moment as well, and I noticed this. So they then bring on Namibia. I think there's a few changes that... If you want an idea of how different the two teams are, at the same time, Fiji bring on Albert Vuli-Vuli,
yeah,
who is a big old lump. Like, he is a huge boy.
Well-established top 14 player as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he is, like, he is an enormous crash ball centre. Like, he's very much in the mould of a 12 at the time.
Yeah.
Or he played a lot of 13 as well. But yeah. He's very much the mould of a centre at the time, who was just a big boy who smashed it up.
Yeah.
Like, solid, reliable, but bam, he does his job. And in the centre, instead... Namibia bring on the same stoppage, Daryl Delahape. And how would you describe Daryl Delahape?
I don't know, he's sort of wiry runner, I guess. Perfectly decent player, has a decent short-range passing game.
Yes. He's one of these players as well who doesn't really know how to kick but loves to kick.
Yeah, that's probably a fair assumption.
He's like the opposite of Josh Adams.
Yeah.
You know that way, every time you see Josh Adams kick, your heart's in your mouth, and then it always goes really well.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fair comparison.
So there's two moments which he comes on and just thumps it, and he kind of thumps it pointlessly long, which I like. But then my favourite moment he has is a moment when he kicks it long, he's kind of been covering, and he goes to in the back with a man we haven't actually mentioned once, Seremiah Bai.
Oh my god, how have we not mentioned
him? Who was
him?
Playing 12. We've talked for about an hour, and we haven't once mentioned Seremiah Bai. Again, quickly, so much Seremiah Bai for me.
You know Duncan Weir?
Yes.
Like, in terms of his proportion for a fly half, which Bai... Basically, imagine that, but Bai, like, is a bit too big to actually be a fly half. But it's Fiji and they're slightly short-staffed at fly halves, so...
He's like if Duncan Weir ate himself.
Yeah, he's basically a fridge who has a big boot.
It's like if people call Duncan Weir either the meatball or pudding.
Yeah.
Seremiah Bai is a full three-course meal.
Yes, he is. He is a sizable man, is Bai.
Yes.
Yet he played as a utility back because clearly they just don't... A lot of Fijians don't fancy playing 10. They fancy playing a little bit wider. So... When they're short-staffed, he steps in, clearly. But he was playing inside centre in this game with Lovagnani at 10.
He was 12, but he took on most of the responsibility of game management. And he kicked the goals and so on.
Yeah. Lovagnani basically played no position. I totally forgot he existed, by the way, Lovagnani.
Me too, completely, yeah. Well, I kind of figured that there was someone, because occasionally Seremiah Bai played centre, so I figured there must have been a 10 alongside him.
Yeah, well, I thought about Nicky Little.
I'd completely forgotten about him. Yeah, but Nicky Little retired by this point.
No, he played later on in this World Cup.
Did he?
Yeah, he was the first choice with Lovagnani, second.
Oh, of course he was, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, your point still stands.
But yeah, Seremiah Bai, who is a huge fly half, and he's kind of like, he played quite a lot of top flight rugby. I think he's now coaching a school. I think he's like head of rugby at... I want to say he's head of rugby at Canterbury School. But
you don't want to let him down, do you?
No. He's the kind of player who could have been extremely good if he wasn't dealing with his body shape.
Yeah. In another world, he's like Saleha Mapasua, isn't he?
Exactly. In another world, he either lost the weight and became a class 10.
Yeah.
Because he had the skill set for it and the vision for it.
Yeah.
Or he really committed to his shape and he became a centre who can distribute. Like yeah. Like Josh Matavesi was for a couple of years. Yeah. Or like, as you say, Saleha Mapasua.
Not a bad player, by the
like,
way.
No. No. No, he wasn't at all. Like, he was, as I say, he had outstanding vision and skill set.
Bloody huge.
But he was kind of let down by, exactly. Like, he was kind of, he almost had too many attributes that got in the way of one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was a big old boy. And there's a moment, as I say, in which Donny van Wyk has hoofed the ball downfield and Bai's covering the backfield. And Bai then goes to kick it back. And as he's doing it, Delahape, goes in and he begins to drop a shoulder to drop it late after Bai's kicked it back. And then he looks up, sees who it is and runs off in the other direction. And he kind of, instead, just shoulders nobody.
Good on you, mate.
Because he's clearly doing that, like, oh, I was committed, sorry, I couldn't do it. And he kind of goes, shit, that guy's twice my size. And doesn't
and all
do
those
it.
Friends look so hard.
Yeah, exactly.
He might like, get Akabuzi and Gera on me.
I was about to say, they've just brought on Akabuzi and Gera. I'm going nowhere near them.
Can you sub me off now, please, coach?
Yeah. Being able to bring Gera off the bench as well.
Yeah. And also, they'd left like, out Matadingo.
Yeah. Oh, he was a good player.
He was.
I forgot about Matadingo. Oh, man. No, because they're starting back row. Wanka Bolotu, Ravulu, and Netani Tale.
It's a good back
row. Leone Nakarawa. They also had their captain from the front row, Tighthead, was Deacon Marnie.
Yes.
Who Scarlet's fans will remember, and nobody else.
Bizarre that he was Fiji captain, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, because literally a year earlier, like to a day, a year before that World Cup, there was talk of him playing for Wales.
Yeah.
And then he was named in the Fiji squad when he just qualified on residency for Wales. And Adam Jones was injured at the time. And they didn't have a cover tight head.
Yeah.
And there was talk of him being the guy they brought in. I think Craig Mitchell was injured as well. They had two injuries at tight head.
That's a throwback as well, Craig Mitchell.
Yeah. And in the end, they ended up playing Paul James at tight head. They ended up moving him across from Loosehead. But there was talk of Deacon Marnie being who they called up. And then he got named in the Fiji squad like a week before the Wales squad, and no one knew he was Fijian qualified.
Yeah, and he was captain of Fiji within like a month of being called up as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was captain like by their so he like his first three caps in the autumn, and then by the following spring he was captain.
Yeah,
and it was completely inexplicable because he kind of just played for about 2 years for Fiji, having as I say been Kiwi, played for Maori All Blacks, and then went off and ended up playing for Fiji.
Yeah.
Yeah, when his last cap in 2012.
Yeah, fair play.
But he was like a solid, you know, just what you asked for a tight head.
Oh, yeah.
Fine. But he was their captain at the time. Campesi Marfu at Loosehead as well.
Yeah.
Who went on to play for Welsh Regions as well.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a mad game with a mad Fijian team, an incredibly skillful team, against a Namibian team who, as I got noted down at one point, there's one passage of play where Namibia throw 9 offloads.
Oh, you love it. The thing is, I wanted to say that Namibia are so sensible they become mad, but that, it's not even that, is it? Like, I guess they approached it sensibly, then just totally came out the other end.
Yeah. Well, because they sort of, they went into it going, what we're going to do, and I love the fact that the second drop, or the first drop goal rather, the second three-pointer, is after Fiji have scored their try, is to put them within 1 point.
Yeah.
And there's no, if we score a try, we overtake them.
Yeah.
So no, actually, we're playing the long game. We need to take all the points we can.
Yeah.
We don't have the opportunities we're going to have. Possible. Yeah.
But that's the thing, though, because, you know, final score 49-25 is quite respectable because even if, say, if you're a smaller team and your opposite team scores about 70 points and you score 30-35, that still looks like you're in the game.
Yeah.
You've got to respect that.
And that's kind of where you come down in Namibia is that they started out with a very clear game plan. And then after a while, because every time they got into the Fiji's half, they scored points.
Yeah.
But the problem was when Fiji got into their half, they scored more points.
Yeah, and I
think Fiji scored on basically every single visit on the 22, they scored a try.
Yeah. That's what sums up the game brilliantly. It's just that they'd come in there and then just effortlessly score 7 points, which happens to be more than 3. But and again, for those drop goals and the penalties and stuff in the first half, all of the Namibian players look so well behaved and like so much like they're playing to their roles. And then eventually they reach a point where it's just like, oh yeah, we're sound with these guys, Fiji, aren't we? You know, they're sound, aren't they? Let's just do what we want with them. Let's just mess about with them.
And it did feel a bit like that. It did feel like it kind of felt like they went, oh, wait, we had a really set game plan. and it worked. It was great. And then they kind of went about 25 minutes, about half an hour. Shit, their game plan's better. Let's do that. They kind of then just adopted the Fijian game plan. As I say, like around the half hour mark, somewhere between like half hour and half time, they threw 9 offloads in one passage of play.
About 20 minutes into the game, clearly Jack Berger goes up to one of the Fijian players and says, like, hey, where did you get that outfit from? And then they tell him, like, ha ha, I know what you're doing. Or, like, you know in Power Rangers, when the villain always tells the Power Rangers exactly what their plan is, and
yes,
then they just go, oh, okay, well, this is what they're going to do, so let's just stop them doing that, and then they'll come back bigger, and then we'll become massive as well, and we'll just have a fight that way. That's basically what happened in this game. Somebody out there is going to get that analogy. Niche demographic, rugby players and Power Rangers fans. I make that sound like I still watch Power Rangers.
Don't you?
I do.
Good. Okay. I'm very glad. The one other note I've got written down. The one other thing. My one last thing I'll add.
Hit me.
Oh, there's two things. I think they both kind of sum up just oddities about the game. There's one passage of play, and I think it sums up Fijian rugby in general, but especially how they approach this game, in which Momo Rali, the fullback, picks and goes from a ruck. And so in steps the number 6 to play scrum half, who passes to the hooker, who's at 10, who then spins it.
He intercepts the 9-10 channel, doesn't he?
Yeah. And that sums up Fijian rugby, that you can ignore the numbers on the back completely. They don't care. And in a similar moment of ignoring the numbers on the back, there's a bit where Eugene Yankees, the Namibia scrum half, goes to put up a box kick just outside zone 22. And the box kick blows backwards. And it could have been a disaster, because Napoleon Ilanga is chasing, except it's stopped by one Mr. Raoul Larson, who is this just, like,
awesome
Rombies-looking melon farmer, who, yep, debutant, like, as I say, there's a certain amount of Rombies about him. There's a kind of this bald, like, balder loose head on debut. Raoul! Etc.
Loss.
And for some reason, when the box kick went in, he drops back into like the winger's channel.
That's the definition of I don't want to chase that kick.
Yeah, it would have been a try for Nalanga, most likely. There's two Fijians chasing, including Napoleon Nalanga. But for the fact that their tight head, who played 80 minutes as well, but fair play.
Yeah. And played well, he scrummaged well.
Yeah. Oh, their scrum was completely on top for the first half, first 50 minutes.
Until they're tired,
they just demolished them, yeah.
Big up Johnny Redlin-Hayes as well.
Johnny Redlin-Hayes, great player.
Hero.
And Raoul Larson, great debut.
Yeah.
Went on to play the next World Cup as well.
I don't remember Larson.
No, I had only vague memories of him. But yeah, he's dropped back to fullback, and he saves a try through sheer laziness.
Clearly he looks at his mate who's been nominated for Try of the Years and stuff, thinks, oh yeah, this is my international
exactly.
Am I alright to hang around with you here?
It's like he watched both of Chrisander Botha's Try of the Year nomination and went, I could do that. I could roll over and do that.
There was also a couple of times, I think it happened twice, when two-time IRB Try of the Year nominee Chrisander Botha did a dive pass just to kind of flex. He had loads and loads of time and just went, right, cameras are on, let's just show off, let's just go for a dive pass here.
Because I think that's what this game was at the end of the day, to almost sum it up quickly. It's like, it's the best merger I've ever seen between, or one of anyway, but no, I think it is. I think I will go all out. It is the best I've ever seen. Merger between like high-end intensity rugby and absolute chuckabout.
Yeah.
And like, it feels like a World Cup game because you've got teams taking drop goals and you've got real focus from both
teams.
It's
a celebration.
Exactly. Both teams are throwing everything at it. But at the same time, actually, at the end of the day, they're really enjoying themselves.
Oh,
and they're playing mad barbarians rugby. And it feels a bit like a chuckabout on a park, but it also feels like a World Cup final. It's properly great. It's everything you could possibly love about rugby happens in this game between Fiji and Namibia that no one remembers, no one talks about.
Yeah.
But I love it.
And you knew from about the 50th minute onwards that even if Namibia didn't make another tackle for the rest of the game, their coach was praising them at the end of the game.
Yeah, because they came out, they had a clear plan, they played to it, they did everything they could to put themselves as in contention as possible against a smaller team. And yet, you know, they could have defended with the ferocity that Uruguay did 15 years, or 8 years, whatever it is later. 8 years, yeah. But they did everything with the ball in hand they could, and they really took their points and they were calm. And unfortunately, Semaya Bai is a better goal kicker than Josh Matavesi. So that's
not going there.
No. In fact, if you took off, they'd still have won. Yeah. But still, it'd be 30-25 if Josh Matavesi was kicking the goals.
Yeah, so it's a bonus point.
At that point as well, Namibia are playing differently, aren't they? They're taking all their shots still. They're still dropping goals if they're still in chance thanks to that.
Still doing reverse mad shit.
Yeah.
Which is still mad shit, by the way.
Absolutely. And no, that's what I love about World Cups. I love that pool stages throw up games like this. And as I said, there's something about... Tina Scott said probably wouldn't have played like that if it wasn't a World Cup match.
No. Standard league game, he's not playing like that.
No. He's everyone's watching this. This really matters. And also, there's that kind of that big balls thing of him waltzing in. There's a sheer focus on the fact both teams have built towards this for years. I love everything about this game. I love the way the players approached it. I love the way the two teams responded to each other. I love the sheer scoring pattern, the fact that there are so many, like, so much back and forth. And it's such a great point on, part of what I love about rugby is there's so many ways to win.
Yeah.
And you kind of saw all of them attempted in this game.
Yeah, you did.
Some of them were better than others. But everyone had a go at everything you can possibly do to win a rugby match.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
And it's kind of, it's that, there's so many, you know, the idea is you want to get into the other half and you want to score points. But there's so many ways of doing that. There's so many ways to get where you're going. And people approach every single one. You saw Namibia trying like long line-out drives. You saw Fiji throwing mad offloads. You saw them trying like kick passes and cross kicks. You saw them try one really mental, like short little dink from nine that was weird and almost worked, but got smashed into touch. Yeah. You saw two-time IB try the in on me, Chris Antipota, trying counterattacks that weren't on and yet managed to get away with. You saw that bowling ball move from PJ Van Liel. You saw everything you could possibly want from rugby in this game. And yes, it didn't feature the flashiest, the biggest star players. You know, obviously, Nakua has gone on to become a huge star since. And by all accounts, really, Larson should be a massive star. But they weren't huge stars. And it's saying that Nalanga was the only one you were kind of looking at and going, he's the standout.
Yeah.
And yet, from that cauldron, nonetheless, was one of the best rugby games I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree. And it's weird that this has come up in match three in this World Cup.
Yes.
And as you say, like, it's not a title, Fiji v Namibia, that you expect a lot of. But this is, as you say, one of my favourite test matches I've ever seen.
So, from there, I think it's time to lead into our final chapter, the man of the match and the dick of the day for game three of the 2011 Rugby World Cup. Who was, let's begin, your man of the match?
It was difficult. I mean, I can't ignore Veronique Gonova scoring four tries.
Yes.
First and foremost. And a lot of the other Fiji players, I mean, setting up tries from, you know, Nakarol, we've spoken at lengths about.
I love how we've only given Gonova passing mentions.
Yeah, I know, it's mad, isn't it? Speaks volumes with the game more than anything.
We took a long tangent on the Langer who barely touched the ball's new team, but we barely mentioned Gonova.
Yeah, he just casually, you know, scored four tries.
Yeah. And again, like, there's a load of players who signed for new... As I've already mentioned, like, Nakarawa signed for Glasgow at the back of this game.
Yeah.
Gonova signed for Tigers at the back of this game.
Yeah.
There's loads of examples of that happening throughout both teams.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on. Man of the match.
Yeah. I don't want to make a habit of this because I'm aware in the first game, I nearly gave Sonia Tamalolo the man of the match despite being the replacement prop on the losing team. In the second game, I gave Marius Tinku man of the match on the losing team. I don't want to make a habit of this, but I'm very aware that in 2011 and 2015, the official man of the matches were all on the losing team for every single game. Tyne Scott, man. He was just... Yeah. We hadn't heard of him and he brought so much structure and... His kicking is just, it was so entertaining. And yet when we watched this back, already knowing what was going to happen, I thought, oh my God, he was brilliant rather than just mad.
And it's as complete a performance as you'll see from a 10 in this World Cup.
Yeah, it is. It is. So my man of the match is Tyne Scott.
And I kind of, so for me, it was a real two-horse race. It was between Scott, who I thought was phenomenal and I love, and Leone Nakarawa, who did absolutely everything.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I was leaning towards Nakarawa. I think because actually he's probably responsible for more points if you add it up.
Fair.
But then really, if you'd have said Nakarawa or you said Gonova, I probably would have said Kotze just to balance it out on the stat sheet.
Yeah.
But I was leaning towards him anyway. You've gone for Kotze. I'm going to say man of the match was this unknown guy, unknown man on the Fijian unemployment list. Leone Nakarawa.
Okay, that's fair. So, who was your dick of the day?
this was it. This was a really difficult one. We're saying just before we went on, I didn't have one in mind. I had a few possible contenders. One of them was Buatava for chucking that pass 5 meters forward into touch.
Yes.
One of them was Dao De La Harpe for not shouldering Saramaya Bai.
Yeah.
There's a few things, Marias for offloading when there's no one there. But I really struggled to pick one. And so I think, really, much as the true winner that day was rugby, the dick of the day was rugby.
Oh, that's a great call. Three matches in, that's ballsy.
It was either that or, like, anyone that didn't get up in the morning to watch this.
True.
Anyone that didn't see, like, 5:15 a.m. Fiji versus Namibia. Nah, I'll skip that one. I'm a lion. Fool.
Are you telling me, then, that your official dick of the day on the Squidge Rugby Retrospective World Cup thing of rugby is rugby?
Yes. Sure, yeah. We said we'd talk about rugby. We're calling it a dick.
Yeah, you dick. Do you want to know my dick of the day?
Or do, I do,
should we
yes.
just end it now? Yeah, okay.
Yes, no, I want to know your dick of the day.
Okay. We've spoken a lot about Namibia being aware of that the cameras were on them. And
yes.
There's a bit of a story here about a certain player who has clearly watched a lot of rugby before and realised that when you're on TV, what the players do is the ball goes out and you take a quick throw in. It doesn't really matter
right,
what the
yes.
circumstances are. Jacques Nivenhuis sees the ball goes into touch. He pelts towards
yeah.
the touchline, grabs the ball and just chucks it in when there's nobody there.
Yeah.
And he just chucks a quick throw to nobody. So for that, and don't get me wrong, I totally appreciate it. I would do the same thing in his shoes. Just go, yeah, I know how to take quick throws. So my dick of the day is
it's
Jacques
a bit
Nivenhuis.
Like... So both Rugby Challenge and Rugby 20 have
yes.
a button that comes up very rarely where you can take a quick throw. And every time it does it, you kind of go, oh, I've got to take it. I've got to do a quick throw. He kind of has that moment, doesn't he?
To the point at which we've made it a rule that when we play that game, that
yes.
if we're playing on the same team, we're playing on different teams, you have to take the quick throw if it comes
yeah.
up as an option.
Exactly. You've got to throw that in. And the thing about that, he chucks it in, there's no one there. And I think it's Van Zyl who then turns around and kind of goes, right, the ball's here. And he picks it up in kind of that half-hearted, like, I'll chuck it back to the sideline way. Then notices two Fijians tackle him. And he's kind of being hit. And you hear Nigel Owens, who was the referee.
Yeah.
And again, it's a sign of a good game when Nigel Owens hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah.
Because he normally puts a lot of spotlight himself. Bless him. But it was a great game. And actually, it's not a coincidence, probably, that it was a wonderful game. And Nigel was
yeah,
refereeing
yeah, yeah.
very fairly.
He adapts
it was
well,
very good.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
To this
but
ever-changing
Nigel
game.
Then turns to the touch judge and says, is that all right? Are we playing on? And the touch judge kind of shrugs. And he just goes, all right, play
yeah.
on.
Screw it. Like, do what you
whatever.
Want, lads.
Go on. Dick of the day.
Go for a shower.
Yeah.
Anyone want to come for a pint with me?
Yeah. Jacques Nivenhuis, very good shout for dick of the day.
Yeah.
Just as all of you, thank you very much for joining me.
You're all good shouts out there.
All very good shouts. I didn't say at the top of the show this, and I haven't said it on the others. We probably edited a bit in. Thank you very much to Tom Rosenthal for doing the intro.
Big up Tom Rosenthal.
For making that. We recorded the first two episodes before he'd done it. We still haven't actually heard it.
No.
So that's
it
all
could
to
be
happen.
Shit for all we know.
It won't be. It won't
no,
be.
It won't
He's
be.
Very good at what he does. This one has been a long one, but as we said before we recorded, I think we're happy for this and the one in the final to be the
yeah.
longest. To be the ones that really drag on, because those are my two favourite games of the tournament.
Yeah, and as I said, like, at the start of this game in my notes, I've just got, oh my god, here we go, written at the top, which I feel like will happen, you know, three or four times throughout a tournament of 48 games.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm happy for this to be one of those anomalies.
Yeah. And this is kind of, it's a game that sings to the rugby nerd part of me, because it is everything I want on that, like, I've been on, like, three tirades about that, but... Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for listening all the way
yeah,
through this,
you.
Like, almost hour and a half of us banging on about...
We're really cool in real
Fijian.
Life, I promise.
We're not. Like, we're
not.
We're really... Like, I'm not, and he's even less so. It's quite remarkable, really. that, I believe, brings us to an end. Next game is actually kind of another banger. This was Japan pushing France... A France team that goes on to make the final, but is completely mental on the way there.
Let's just also, just to preface this, this is before Japan were good.
Yes. Yeah, this is a nuts little Japan team. They're having a lot of fun playing an even madder French team. It's a fun game. There's a lot happens in it. We will be joined by a guest for the first time as well.
Ooh, I wonder who that is.
Which is very exciting. We'll see you. We'll see her. I'll see you,
ooh,
Mr. Owen.
It's a her.
We'll see. Or it might not be.
It might be Israel Folau.
Could be a red herring. I'll say this now. I really want Israel Folau on this.
Yeah, Israel, I know you're listening.
Israel Folau is my dream guest. Yeah,
he's not blocked me on Twitter yet. He's blocked you twice.
He's blocked me the first time because I tweeted a thing to him about how much he loves riding men. And the second time he just blocked the Squid Rugby account because he clearly knows who I am, which delights me.
Yeah. So send Folau nudes. It's not
if you're a man.
Yeah,
Send us your feedback. Not we're not asking anything.
No, I don't care about
that. Don't send us letters. Just send
definitely
everything.
Don't send us news.
If you have any thoughts on this game, send them to Israel Folau.
Yeah, please.
Fill up his inbox with talk of Danny Van Veek. I want Israel Folau to wake up one morning. There he is. He's new to the Catalan Dragons. He can't even go into training. He's been locked down. He checks his mentions.
And
he's so confused. Why is everyone talking about Napoli only the Langer?
Izzy Folau, you're right. Saramaya Bai is a bit like a fridge.
What a game Tinas Dubler he had.
Oh, please do this.
Even if you can't remember this game, send him DMs.
No bit. I will be for the next few days after this episode goes out, just searching at Izzy Folau and seeing what people are sending him. Please make this happen.
For no other reason, it would delight me.
Yeah.
And I will say as well, we're recording these before any of them have gone out.
Yeah.
We're recording the first three or four in advance, so we're kind of stockpiling them, as is the lockdown tradition. So I may not see them until later on. It may be a few episodes before we kind of read any out. But please, I wanna dive into those.
Yeah.
Send Israel Folau all of your thoughts on Johnny Redlin Hayes. Yeah. And until then, until next time.
Thanks for persisting.
Until France v Japan. We'll see you. Thank you very much for listening. This has been a long one.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Good night.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.